You are listening to Well Met, a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Good evening and welcome to episode number 42 of Well Met. We are a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. I'm John. I push the buttons every week. And with me, of course, is the entire crew. First, from Saskatoon, Canada, it is Kevin Hovdestad. Hey, Kev, how you doing, man?
I'm super good, John. Really excited to be doing our first show in 2016, episode 42. We do not have the answers to life, the universe, and everything. I apologize in advance, but... Yeah, no, I'm really excited. We had a pretty cool looking show. There's a lot of good stuff in this show.
Such a bad joke.
Come on. What are you? Don't shake your head at me. Come on. I'm allowed. What, usually it's you. I get to make one. It was my turn. Okay. It's my turn.
That's true. But then what do I bring?
That. That silence is actually really charm. Come on.
That silence is very offensive. Speaking of dashing roguish charm. With his hood up like a straight G, it is J.R. Cook. Hey, J.R.
Yeah, it's cold in here. It has nothing to do with being gangster. Sorry.
They're pretty gangster in Kansas.
I know that
City.
I like look majorly gangster and talk gangster, but the hood is definitely not gangster. I'm sorry.
No.
I don't know, man. He's making like, you can't see this because you're listening to an audio podcast, but he's throwing his hand up, making some like gang sign looking actions happen. Yeah. I don't know.
It's called
gestures. So I have questions.
Hand gestures.
Yeah, it's just cold in here. I don't have any heat on.
They're not gang signs.
My 2016 resolution is to become warmer. Kevin's 2016 resolution is to look 12.
It's true.
Oh, rude.
He's no longer the bearded man. Sorry, Kev.
It's okay. There's more to me than my beard.
After looking at you without your beard, I don't know about that. I'm sorry.
whoa.
Oh, shots fired. Come on.
All right, guys. Hearthstone time here. So before we get jumping into the show, we've actually got two really cool updates that we wanted to share with you guys. First is we've been featured on HearthstonePlayers.com by Half Broke Chris as one of the his top four podcasts. So that was really cool. We were up there with a lot of our good friends from The Angry Chicken, Velen's Chosen, and the fourth one was Hearth Coach. So a great elite company to be with. So thanks so much. It's an awesome article. And if you are looking for some more podcasts to fill your day, because who can't get enough Hearthstone podcasts? I have like 30 on my list. You should too. So you should definitely go ahead and check that out. Big thanks. And also, we were also featured on Realm Maintenance yearly maintenance episode, 2 hours and 40 minutes long, where he goes through his favorite Blizzard podcasts and favorite Blizzard moments. And we were featured there as well for Hearthstone. So cool. Good job, guys. This is an air high five to Kevin and JR and myself and all of you guys for sticking with us through these 42 episodes. Thank you guys so much, and go check those out. They'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Thanks for those who did that, and I would have put us as number one podcast on BlizzPro, just as that, because, you know, that's what I would do. I should have written an article. as he tries to play me off.
Oh, we're playing him off. Grab the cane from the side and just rip him off. Let's go.
Yeah.
This Week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
Yes. So 2016 is upon us, and we got off of a pretty long, we're like, it'll be half hour, 45 minutes, hour and a half later, decided, okay, it's been long enough, but we at the Well Met team here decided to kind of sit down and chat about the show a little bit, kind of see what we wanted 2016 to look like. And we've just got a few updates for you. First and foremost, on the practical side of things, that's going to affect everybody. We've kind of made a commitment to three things that we're looking to do in 2016. Three. There they are. The first is after the show, we are looking to do every week with a small asterisk, as basically probably 90% is probably going to be likely the closer number to that. But we're going to do a post show stream for about an hour and run cool decks or try to climb the ladder or do an arena run or whatever that looks like. So we want to hang out with you guys a little bit more. And so we're going to do that after the show Sunday nights. So come check that out. Second, more guests. We want more people to come on the show. And excitingly, we get to officially announce Jocelyn Moffat is going to come back on January 17th, pending that my computer doesn't explode this time again and we have to reschedule again. But Jocelyn Moffat will be here on January 17th live in the show. And we're going to talk about her grind to legend and everything else she's been doing in Hearthstone. And the third thing is being more active on social media and on Twitter. We have our subreddit, we have Twitter, and we're just looking to stay committed to being on that a lot more so we can interact with you guys. So those are the big three kind of overarching things, but let's go ahead. Kevin, I think we've got some Patreon updates, don't we?
We do. So when you said three, what you meant was four, because this one's pretty significant, I think. So we've decided that because Patreon changed their sort of like user facing metric to show the amount of money that is being contributed by our patrons after the Patreon deductions and fees and taxes and stuff, we wanted to update all of our Patreon information to reflect that, because it sort of made everything look really disjointed. It looked like we hadn't actually hit our own goal for the merchandise store, which you guys got us to an age ago. So we're just going through and kind of, it's more of like a numbers change than anything, but there's a couple of other minor updates. So originally we had set our next goals at slightly higher price points that are now inaccurate. The new ones, we're going to redo our intro, outro, bring Casey back in, record some cool new voiceover work at $250 based on the new system. And we're really, really close. Basically, if anybody after tonight's show was like, man, that was a really good episode, Kevin sounds just fine without a beard, you could go, you could toss us a couple bucks as a thank you, help us kind of kick off our 2016 in a big way, and we'd be right there and able to reach out and start recording that stuff pretty much ASAP. We're going to go ahead and add call-in shows. The exact frequency and details, we're still kind of kicking around because John's got to figure out some of the technical stuff and we have to figure out how it's going to fit in with the rest of the show. But we'll do that for you guys at the $300 overall mark. And at $400, down from where it used to be, will be our new bonus episode. So we'll add an additional show every month, which will bring us to a total of 4 shows a year instead of the 52 that we would in theory be doing right now, give or take on things like BlizzCon. What that means for individual donors is this. We've left the $1 and $5 tiers alone. You can still get a shout out on the show for becoming a patron. You can still get access to our Dropbox, which we're going to try and do a better job of in 2016, like putting more sound files, wallpapers, and cool stuff in there for you guys that's exclusive to supporters of the show. At $15 now, the next tier that we're going to introduce, we're actually going to set up a private, well-met patron Facebook group. That'll be where all of our patrons can come, hang out, chat with us, toss around deck lists, get advice, just to chat and sort of see what's going on and is cool between us and you guys, as a big thank you for the amount of support that you're giving us. And we are going to try really, really hard, like John said, to be more active on social media, be really available in there to you guys to chat and kind of help you out with, you know, your grind to legend or whatever it is that, you know, is fun for you guys in Hearthstone. At $30 will be the new tier that we're going to introduce, coaching. And so you're going to be able to get an hour of coaching time from us at the $30 mark now, which is down from where it used to be. So if you want to get some coaching every month, $30 from any host of your choice, we'll sit down, we'll play an hour of games with you and help you try to get better at the game, grind higher up on the ladder, maybe go for the, you know, big, you know, next bump for you, whatever that is, rank 5 to get your golden epic at the end of the month or even legend. And then the last thing is at $50, we're introducing a new reward. It's kind of, we're calling it right now a friend of the show. And basically, instead of the one time shout out at the portion of the show where we thank our patrons after you first support the show, at $50, we're actually going to treat you as a permanent supporter of the show, and we're going to thank you basically like a sponsor every episode. So every time we sit down and record, if you are supporting us for $50 every month, we're going to thank you as part of the show each and every month, week, as we're doing our major sort of Patreon thank yous at the end of the show.
Boom. There it is. We're going to leave it at that because it's been 10 minutes and we really want to talk about Hearthstone with you guys. But check out more. Hit us up on Twitter if you have questions. I'm really good at replying to stuff. So we'll reply to any questions that you guys have. And thank you for the support. JR.
Okay, so some of the big news this week, there wasn't really a lot of news regarding Hearthstone, but there is a really big news item that I thought was rather interesting. And basically, Activision Blizzard has been rumored to have purchased MLG, the Major League Gaming, for $46 million. And it's very much was a like an asset purchase more so than like just buying them out completely and, you know, wanting to do something with them, which tells us, you know, maybe this probably doesn't have too much to do with what Blizzard's going to do or what Blizzard will do with MLG, if anything. In my opinion, it's probably going to be more of a MLG division within Activision. Anyway, the vice president of the esports division in Activision is the same guy who was one of the co-founders of MLG, so there was a connection there. But for those who are looking at, like, if this was going to be a big item and was going to affect Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch, any of Blizzard's titles, probably less likely than you realize it'll be. They might use some of the assets, but probably not, in my opinion. Kevin, do you have anything you want to say about that?
I mean, I do, because I think we talked about this a little bit amongst ourselves. I can't actually find anything. I know Forbes Gaming was trying really hard to actually confirm this story and get somebody from either Activision or MLG to comment, and there's been nothing. Like, no one has firmed up what's going on here. But, I mean, we do know that MLG had active events planned that were, you know, just on the horizon here. They weren't in receivership or anything. Like, they didn't go out of business. And the way that the thing that was leaked, I guess, from Esports Observer was written, it did sound, you're right, like an asset acquisition, which is very similar to what Blizzard did with IPL years gone by. They acquired their offices, their staff, their equipment, and they were able to use that for a period of time. They eventually folded that office. Most of those people don't work for Blizzard anymore. But I'm hopeful, I guess, that if this does turn out to be a true story, which right now it feels pretty likely that it would be. There's really nothing to suggest that this couldn't happen or shouldn't happen. I'm actually hopeful that it means that Blizzard is going to use some of those assets, you know, for some of the planned things they have going on this year, whether that's, you know, a second Heroes of the Dorm, maybe some more big announcements for Hearthstone like they did at the Foundry in San Francisco last year, because they have more people, more equipment, more on the ground presence for that kind of stuff. That would be great. If that's what's happened here, then awesome. But right now, we're all kind of in wait and see mode.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were expecting to see, based on just things I saw on the internet, people in speculation expecting to see MLG start taking on StarCraft again, start taking on Hearthstone, start taking on Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch, and all of that. I don't think that's going to be the case, though. I think if anything, MLG will function the way that it has. It just has a different boss.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're all caught up on the big Blizzard or Activision Blizzard acquisitions this week, right? So let's go ahead, jump into something. This is also pretty cool. So user Brielle_HS in Reddit posted a really interesting, well thought out thread about a pity timer in Hearthstone. So before we even jump into it, let's talk about what a pity timer is for those who may be new to the term. A pity timer is basically an algorithm used when a player is not significantly rewarded for doing a task. In this case, it's like getting a legendary when you open a Hearthstone pack. Or in World of Warcraft, it's when you're raiding and you haven't gotten a piece of loot to drop and X many bosses or whatever, stuff like that. And basically, each time a player does not win a roll is usually what you call it, because it's usually some sort of role-based system. The next role has a greater chance of awarding the player the prize or the objective. So basically, it's like each time you roll the dice, they become a little bit more loaded in your favor until eventually you get that and those timers reset. So, yeah, let's go ahead and talk about this a little bit because this is interesting. We have opened up packs together before, us three, and Kevin and I very much kicked JR's butt. So JR has been on the beat down on this. So the general consensus is basically it's basically impossible, right? I think is what the numbers have told us, to go 40 packs without getting a legendary unless you switch expansions or pack types, right? And so in the end, basically it means that when you go and buy 40 packs, you should get at least one legendary. They took these numbers from all sorts of different websites and collecting websites and stuff like that, and they found this to eventually be true. In fact, one website even paid players in packs about like 30 packs if they were able to record them not doing it. And how they did it was they switched expansions. So, Kev, let's talk about this a little bit. I know this is kind of basic. This isn't competitive Hearthstone. This isn't skill theory or things like that. But why is this a big deal? Why of all of a sudden is this the top thread in Reddit?
I mean, a couple of reasons, right? I mean, we have kind of always known that there had to be some sort of system in play to make sure that a player didn't go an indefinite period without getting a reward, because otherwise, basically, if you look at the mathematical chances, because people have always been trying to calculate, like, what's your percentage chance of getting a golden legendary from a pack or whatever? Statistically, there was going to be players who would start playing and never get a good reward. Like, they would go their entire Hearthstone career, thousands of packs, spend hundreds of dollars, and never see a legendary card. Like, that was a statistical probability. That is awful. As a, like, consumer experience, that would be terrible. So this is a system that they've kind of co-opted internally from World of Warcraft, right? They introduced this in WoW for quest rewards because there were people who were having that exact experience. They were out on the collect 10 horse hoof quests, and it would take them days because the 1 in 5 chance of getting a horse hoof or whatever never came through for them. And they're like, I've been trapped here for days. This is insane. Why is the game... Why does the game hate me? And it was just random numbers, right? Random number generation. If there isn't some kind of guiding system like this, does leave certain people just totally in the dust. So it's really cool that they've introduced this. And I think actually a really nice thing to be aware of as a consumer, like as a member of the public, I look at this with no other vested interest other than like, oh, OK, if you want to play this game and you spend money on it or you buy packs for your kids as a gift or something, like, they're not going to not get something cool out of it. And that's a really nice kind of like, okay, the panic can subside. No one's going to ever buy $40 or $50 worth of stuff and not get something worthwhile. There was actually comments in the thread that said that they've established that this also applies to Epic cards. And there's a lower counter, like 14, I think, or something for an Epic card, as opposed to the 39 for a legendary. But it's like, it's a nice thing to know. And for me, honestly, all this does is just reinforce how important it is for us to eventually get better ways to track data in this game and better statistics. Like, we would have known this on like day 3 of Hearthstone being out in the wild had we had access to the data, and getting the data is super hard. So I'm hopeful that this is something where Blizzard will see the positive response and how everybody's like, oh, okay, that's awesome. And there's like, no one's mad. No one's like, oh, I've gone 100 packs with no legendary. Like, no one can disprove this now. It's basically a fact. I think it'd be really nice for them to just come out and own this and say, yep, that's exactly how it works. We're going to try and release some more information so that you guys know exactly how things work, because this is really a good thing that this is out in the wild, in my opinion.
It could be also that people could game it if it was too public on exactly how it worked. People could game the system, is probably why Blizzard wouldn't do something like that. It reminds me a lot of Diablo's system as well, with how they do legendaries. They also have a pity timer as well. So this isn't anything new to Blizzard games.
How do you, do you mean game the system as getting less legendary cards? Like,
or trying to maximize to get more, right?
Yeah. I mean, the only way I could see that is somebody did posted like, I'm a live streamer, and after I go about 30 to 35 packs, I start making bets with my stream, that I'm going to get some in the next couple packs and never fails and people are amazed and astonished. But I don't know how that ever...
Well, I mean, it could be something like, okay, I have bought X number of packs with gold or something like that, and then I know that I haven't gotten a legendary in a while, so now I'm going to buy, you know, 40 packs with money, and I'm going to have a higher chance with those 40 packs to potentially get legendaries or something like that. I mean, just people will find a way to game the system to try to benefit from it.
I mean, that I don't think that's how it works. And I also think that if that's what happens, Blizzard will jump up and down being like, okay, cool. Now we've convinced people that they should buy packs, 40 packs at a time, because they know they get a legendary. Like, there's no possible way this doesn't work out better for Blizzard.
I was just using that as an example of something. It doesn't mean that how they game the system, I don't know, obviously, but there is a potential that they could game the system.
I think the point, and to JR's point too, is I think Blizzard would rather just have people focus on playing the game than rather than trying to find a way, because eventually, you know, it's right. Every game that we've ever played, whenever like a system like that, people try to game it. In this case, yeah, I don't see how that would ever work in the player's favor outside of, hey, Blizzard, I found a way to not do this. And Blizzard would be like, well, because you're an idiot.
As a software engineer that, you know,
that's
creates
how you
algorithms
think. Yeah.
As their own, it's just how, you know, how could I game, you know, this to get the results that I want?
Yep.
It could happen. That's all I'm saying. But the other thing that I wanted to say, though, is this is something that, like, physical card games do, right? You know, Magic the Gathering, if I buy a box of cards, I usually know exactly, not exactly, but a roundabout number of how many, like, I think they're called mythics now or something like that, that I would get in a box. And it's usually like three or so in a box. If I buy a box of cards and I get three, I've gotten the average. So, you know, physical card games kind of have that as well as this. So it doesn't really surprise me that Blizzard is kind of taking the same approach from an algorithm point of view.
So I do want to ask you guys this one last question, then we'll go ahead and move on. Do you think that, and just rounding here, one in 35 to 40 packs is a high enough chance to be okay? Do you think that's an okay number? Do you think it should be, and unselfishly, I know we all want more legendaries here, but do you think that that number should be lower, that it doesn't reward people enough? I mean, basically it's saying you have to spend, what, 40 packs? Is that $50?
Well, bear in mind, okay, this is not an exact thing. It's not like you just every 40th pack you get a legendary. What's happening is you have an incremental chance to get a legendary that starts at like 1% and increases from that 1% or whatever up to literally 100% when you get to the 39th consecutive pack that you haven't gotten a legendary in. But you're rolling the dice every time. If you were to actually go through and look, I would guess the average person, and this is where you go back to like the law of big numbers stuff, but like the average person is probably getting a legendary once every 20 or 25 packs because they're getting lucky on that percentage dice roll before they get to that 39th pack. And I would guess that the stats will back up that that's how it would bear out in the real world. So setting the like consumer protection number at something higher than 40 seems insane. Setting it something lower than that seems like it would actually be way too aggressive. Like people would build their collections so fast. And I don't think that's what Blizzard wants, obviously.
I would say, based on my experience, average of 40 packs would be 2 to 3 legendaries every 40 packs.
Unless it's you opening your TGT legendaries, in yeah, which case right. It's one.
Right.
Because, yeah,
but,
that was...
But I'm saying average, though, because if you take the three of us, our average was about 3, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin and I were a little bit higher, though.
You each had 5, and I had 1, so...
It's true. Yeah. Anyways, that's the skinny. There is a pity timer. It works in some way somehow. And now you know. The more you know. You're welcome. Let's go ahead and talk about the meta this week.
Beta or Joina.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so we got good news, we got bad news, guys. The bad news, unfortunately, is there are new meta reports. I'm not totally shocked by this. I imagine that pretty much everybody was busy over the last week. Pros excluded, unfortunately, as they were all up until the stroke of midnight on New Year's trying to battle for their legend rank. And boy, was there some salt on Twitter. But instead of spending our time this week on the meta, on meta reports, since there aren't any, we actually saw Hearthhead put together a really cool article. They reached out to a bunch of casters, pro players, personalities, influencers, and asked them what they thought the defining cards of the meta in 2015 and going into 2016 were. Now, there's a couple of sort of like caveats here. A lot of people wanted to talk about pre-nerf versions of cards and stuff because there's been some changes. But in general, we're going to talk about what the big heavy hitting cards of the last year and that also are sort of relevant as we move forward right now look like. So I'm going to throw it to you, JR, and get you to go first here. Tell us what your picks were before we like we'll go through and we'll talk maybe a little bit about kind of the class by class stuff from the Hearthhead article if you guys want, but I want to do ours. So JR, what did you pick as the three heavy hitters for cards in 2015?
Yeah, so my picks, I kind of tried to choose what I felt have changed the meta the most, and there's probably one card I would add to this as well as a number four, but I'll get to that later. Thorasan I had as number one for obvious reasons. He was right out of the gate, played in a lot of different decks, still played in a lot of different decks. He's one of those that can get your combos out quicker. He goes great in mid-range and mid-range decks and decks that need that in-game tempo going. Reno Jackson was my number two for the simple fact that he just changed the meta overnight. And it has built a lot of several decks around him. And I think as the game goes on, he's just going to get better and better and better. My third pick is Mysterious Challenger. And that's because Secret Paladin has kind of ruled the roost for a while now, ever since it came out. The other one that I would have picked would have been Grim Patron for the same reason. But because of the nerf, I didn't include it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Those are all big, big cards. I don't think anyone would argue any of those with you. John, hit me with yours.
All right. I'm going to go a little off meta here just a little bit because I don't want to say all three same cards as you guys. So I'm adding one different. And like, yes, I would 100% agree. Emperor Thorasan is huge. But first and foremost, I'd have to put Grim Patron there. Yes, it has been nerfed. But 2015 was the year of the patron. It went all the way into September before it was last minute, you know, nerf right before the world championship.
Well, keep in mind, Grim Patron itself wasn't nerfed, but the deck
right,
was.
Yeah. The deck was, which made Grim Patron suck. You're correct. But I think that's a huge card, and I think that's something that I would include in there. The second one is Mysterious Challenger. It has given, really, it's given Paladin now three and a half valuable archetypes, which we talked about just the other week. And I think that's really important. And then Reno Jackson, I think, is a huge, huge, huge addition. And even though he came in late, I think that it was a much needed meta shift. I hate him now. I hate the card, but it's definitely been impactful. And because Grim Patron was nerfed, or not nerfed, okay, the deck was nerfed, I do want to like kind of redact that. And the card that I would replace Grim Patron with is Darnassus Aspirant in Druid. And the only reason why is mid-range Druid at that point in time literally needed one thing to secure itself as one of the most consistent decks in Hearthstone history. And that was a 2-drop that could help with mana generation, and it did it. So now you don't have to worry about, if I don't have Wild Growth and I don't have Aspirant, it's very unlikely that you're not going to have those and not have Innervates. It just gives you that ramp that you need to make it huge. So going a little off meta there, I know it's not, you know, like the true top best things. So don't yell at me on Twitter, please. I can't handle it. But those would be my big three. What about you, Kev?
Well, I mean, I think we're all sort of in agreement about the real, like, fundamental things that change the game. The number one for me, even though it's only been now, honestly, a few weeks, is definitely Reno Jackson. I don't think anything has changed the pace of the game quite as significantly. There were lots of cards that made new archetypes possible. There were lots of cards that did cool stuff. But in terms of, like, global scale effect on like the relationship between archetypes, between aggro and control, just how things kind of flow in like Hearthstone at large. Reno is nuts. Reno has made the game so different and is such a change also in bringing Highlander or something resembling Highlander to Hearthstone for the first time. It's never been relevant until now. That nothing has shaken the game up anywhere near that much, in my opinion. I think that's like a solid lock for most significant card by a huge margin. And the only reason people aren't saying it's the number one one is because we've only had a month to really enjoy it. Like, that's, I think that's the reality.
And like I said, I think Reno, once we go more and more expansions, is going to become more and more powerful.
And he's just going to get better. Absolutely. Yeah. There's no way he can't. Like, it's definitely a card that the power creep potential there of how good he can be in a deck that has more and more good options available to it is just absurd. Aggro needs something really awesome. Aggro needs a way to respond. But number two for me is definitely Thorazon, just because it screwed up all of our concepts of how math should work in the game. It made every Malygos deck possible. It made mid-range Druid even scarier somehow when it was already one of the most powerful decks in the game. Like, just unbelievable the things it's done. And it's a real core staple now in a ton of different decks and classes. There's basically no deck where you couldn't run it if you wanted to. My third pick, I honestly, originally I was going to say Mysterious Challenger because I was a huge advocate for Mysterious Challenger when it first got announced, when we were talking like, which cards are going to matter the most from this expansion? I was like, guys, we should maybe put Mysterious Challenger on this list. I feel pretty vindicated about where Mysterious Challenger ended up in the world. But actually, I'm going to say Jessicar Trueheart, because that was a card that totally blew open how a bunch of mid-range and control decks worked. It doesn't have really strong applications for every class. Like, it's awful in Shaman and only 50% is effective in Hunter, but like for mid-range Paladin, for Control Warrior, for Control Priest, like these are classes that have gotten so much value out of this card. It basically brought Control Warrior back to life and gave Control Priest real legs. It's also how mid-range Paladin responded in a lot of ways to the decks that made it look like it was on the way back out, because being able to build two tokens a turn is insane, like super powerful. So I think those would be the three that I'm really feeling the impacts from personally the most.
Well, it finally made that that 5-mana 2/5 much more consistent, right? What is it called? I always forget it. That gives your
recruits quartermaster.
Plus, quartermaster. God dang it. Yes. Quartermaster. It was a huge bump to quartermaster, which is one of the strongest ways that at the time, at least, mid-range Paladin could win. Obviously, that's changed a little bit, but still a very real threat now. If you couldn't not keep those tokens up before, now you definitely can't, because it becomes twice as dangerous when it comes out.
Well, and just a way to get back into the game, right? Like, a lot of the classes that are suffering right now, in my mind, are classes that can't play from behind. They can't re-enter the game after a major board wipe or a major reset, right? The classes that can't do anything once a Reno hits, or the classes that can't do anything after a big Light Bomb or Twisting Nether. Like, if you can't reestablish a board presence and get back into the game somehow, you're in a really tough place right now. That's one of the things that makes mid-range Paladin still so viable. Like, it's only really just dropped out of Tier 1 in the last couple of weeks and could very easily scoot right back, depending on what kind of emerges to counter Aggro Shaman. Because with Aggro Shaman being so popular and prevalent on these lists, everybody's trying to run control. That sets up a beautiful meta for a mid-range Paladin. Like, I think it's going to remain relevant for a really long time.
Yeah. What do you guys think, though? So I know you guys are really heavy on Thorazon, and I am too. Don't get me wrong. I think Thorazon's an incredible, incredible card. But do you really think that it belongs in this same kind of the same vein as Mysterious Challenger, Grim Patron? Because while it is an impactful card, it doesn't impact in the way that these other cards do, right? Thorazon just made your cards cheaper, so it made some new combos prevalent, but the rest of these cards here are straight up activators. Like, they have straight up immediate impact on the board and how the game is played.
I mean, yes and no, right? Like, I think if you look at Thorazon and you draw the comparison to something like Reno Jackson, right? Reno Jackson didn't make it so you play the game fundamentally differently. You built your deck differently, but there's no change in win condition. There's no change in anything because Reno is in play. He just gives you a really broken healbot, right? Like, that's really his role in the game. Thorason, if anything, actually did basically introduce the only new win conditions that we've seen added to Hearthstone in recent memory. Like, what other than Thorason actually added a new win condition in 2015? Mysterious Challenger is just a fat body that hits the board on six. You know, patron
that you win with.
Well, okay, yes, but it, like, the win condition is just play big bodies, right? That hasn't changed by adding a new big body. If another class got a better 6/6 on six, they would play it too. Like, Thorason is the only reason that Malilock is possible. It's why Druid was so dominant for so long. It's the only way that you can actually do a bunch of crazy combos that, like, couldn't have been mathematically possible before. It does. It introduces, like, do you remember Freeze Priest? Do you remember seeing that when that was around for a little while? It was the deck that ran Mind Blasts, Malygos, Velen, and a bunch of stuff, and you basically waited. You just played nothing but removal spells, right? Shadow Word Pain, Shadow Word Death, Shadow Madness. Just don't let your opponent do anything. And then at the end of the game, slap Thorason down, get one tick off, and be able to play just this ungodly mittful of, like, you play, like, Malygos, two Mind Blasts, two Free Smites. Like, you just hold all this stuff in your hand. You basically play to fatigue and then dump 45 damage into their face or whatever. Like, that was never possible. Those win conditions could never have been done before Thorason. I think it opened up the game in a way that, like, we freaked out about because we worried about him sticking on the board. We worried about people getting 2 and 3 and 4 turns of this effect off, which obviously doesn't actually happen. And if it does, you lose. But even one turn, like, one application of that effect is unreal. And the fact that it's attached to a body is just icing on the cake, right?
I think the biggest difference between the cards here is Reno, Mysterious Challenger, Grim Patron. They were decks that you built. They were cards that you built decks around. Thorason is a tech choice that you can add to a deck to make it better. Or, in Kevin's position, make terrible decks that never end up seeing anything in the meta, like Freeze Priest, and build around that and make insane win conditions. I think Thorason's more of a tech choice to make decks better and make your combos, make your mid-range to end game faster.
I think that's fair. We talked a little bit last show, a couple shows back, about how we were sort of counting GVG as being effectively a 2015 thing because it happened on, like, the last days, the last dying breath of 2014. But we didn't talk at all about, like, how crazy things have been with Dr. Boomer, Piloted Shredder, any of those things. Like, I think we already know those have made their impact. We don't have to talk about them anymore. They're just in every deck list. My biggest gripe, honestly, guys, with these lists, including our own, is that I'd really like to see some stuff that affects the game on a turn other than turn six.
That's said Darnassus Aspirant.
I know, but, like, turn six is the turn that matters pretty much across the board here. And I would love to see some stuff that shakes the game up happen not on turn six. Like, I know that they're just trying not to do anything really aggressive in the early game. They don't want anything really gross in the late game. So they're just trying to, like, what can we do between, like, turns four and six? That's interesting. So everything worth playing lands on six.
Okay, so let's go back to the article here, because I totally agreed with you. I thought almost the exact same thing, is that it's very, like, this control the mid-range part of the game, right? And then I looked at Firebat's choices for his cards, and I was completely surprised, because, you know, Firebat, again, we talked about the most impactful Hearthstone players last week or 2 weeks ago, and Firebat was number three. Former world championship, right? You'd expect, you know, people to echo him and whatever he says, but he's so, again, I love the way he thinks. Here's the three cards he chose. First, Imp Gang Boss. It's a 3-mana 2/4 warlock demon, right? Whenever this minion takes damage, summon a 1/1 imp. And then his second one, Keeper of Uldumon. It's a 4-mana 3/4 a paladin minion that says battle cry, set a minion's attack and health to 3/3 or to 3. And then Living Roots, which is a 1-mana druid spell that Kevin hated, by the way. That says
he also
choose
hated
one.
Gang Boss, I believe.
It's true. But then we hated, well, we didn't hate Mysterious Challenger, but he totally called it. Living Roots is a choose one, deal 2 damage or summon 2/1/1 saplings. So altogether, just very strong value cards. And he goes on to say, A lot of notable cards like Mysterious Challenger, Flamewaker, and Emperor Thorison are only strong in a single relevant meta deck, so I did not value them as highly. In saying that these cards are the consistent ones that will always see play and therefore should be the most significant cards in Hearthstone. What do you have to say to that? Would you be, so are you sitting more on the fence of like how Firebat views the game then, Kevin? Is that what you're kind of trying to say? Is that maybe these other players need to think differently about how they are valuing these cards, or maybe these are just kind of flash in the pan cards?
I mean, I don't think so. I think a lot of people felt the impact, right? There's never going to be another deck, for example, that does what Patron Warrior did. No other class is ever going to have the tools to do what Patron Warrior did. Secret Paladin is not going to work better or differently if they have new Paladin secrets or whatever. Like the core concept won't change. He's right. But I mean, it's also a little bit disingenuous to say that those aren't like incredibly relevant cards, and to write Thorison off as only valid in one relevant meta deck is kind of insane, I think. But there's definitely a lot of cards that were introduced to the game that have more consistent value. The one thing I would say to his list is I think he's overemphasizing class cards, right? Most people, when they look at which cards really blew up the meta and defined the game, by definition, you have to choose neutrals because they're cards that can be played in multiple classes, ergo multiple decks. That's why we went straight to the things we went to. I mean, Mysterious Challenger, because you're seeing it 100 times a day right now, sure, but like, you know, Thorison, Reno, I said, Justicar Trueheart, like, I mean, even Grim Patron, technically, on a strict technicality, like the cards that have the most influence are neutral cards. And that's how the game is designed. It will always be that way. Imagine the outcry if there was ever a neutral weapon or spell. Like, the whole game would just blow up, right? So, I mean, I think that's the one thing, is that he's right. Like, his picks are all excellent, but they underemphasize the significance of a neutral card that can be played in any class.
Right. Yeah, the closest we'll ever get to neutral, like, neutral weapons or spells is when we see... what's the mech? Is it Blingtron that does that? Blingtron gives you random weapons. Right, and then obviously like Ysera, you can get some spells and things like that. And it comes from a minion, but we'll never see that for sure.
I mean, even discover cards, right? Like they can't draw you a spell from an alternate class. You can get class spells through like Burgle and Nefaria and stuff that's not like super relevant anyway. I don't know.
Can they not get any spells from a different class at all? I thought that
discover.
I thought it was just weighted.
If it discovers a spell,
was...
it has to be your class spells.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Yep.
Okay. I actually, that makes complete
today, John
sense,
learned.
I never actually put those two together. So shame on me. Okay. So, all right. I'm on board with you, Kev. I'm picking up on what you're putting down. So where do we go from here then?
It's tough, right?
What do you guys think then? So class cards, what do you guys think of like Amaz putting Dark Peddler in there? Orange also had Darnassus Aspirant. And then there's no really other weird ones except for Firebat's just off the wall choices.
See, I kind of like how Hearthhead did it, where they had different nominees for each class. And then their neutrals and things like that. I really feel like neutrals and class cards should kind of be, I don't know, discussed a little bit differently. Like, yeah, Mysterious Challenger is the exception just because of how much it's changed Paladin so much. But yeah, if I was going to say like class cards, I would say, you know, this was really good, like your Darnassus Aspirant. I'd say this was really good for Druid, but I don't feel that it was impactful to the meta as a whole.
You know, it's hard to say, right? Like, I think between the two, truthfully, Darnassus Aspirant is probably the more relevant card. It was probably more impactful to the meta because it made Druid so consistent in a way that Secret Paladin can never be, right? Like, it's just not the same thing in terms of like raw power for the turn it's being played on. Darnassus Aspirant is far and away the better card. The problem becomes that like a lot of these votes feel really skewed based on what's in play right now. Like, I don't think Dark Peddler is a phenomenal 2-drop. I think it has applications. I think it's a good card, but I think that over time, people are going to err on the side of other things, right? And it's not the kind of card that will ever do anything to help build up a new consistent strategy to just simply by virtue of being a Discover card, right? But if you're going to talk most impactful class cards, then sure, yeah. I would go back and I would look at this list and I'd say, like, it just feels super skewed because of the meta we're in that's so heavily dominated by Paladin and Warlock. The best class card added to the game, in my opinion, in 2015 is Entomb. That card is going to be ungodly in what it does to the game. Could be one of the best cards ever introduced, but it's just super hard to play Priest in this meta. Not that it's ever been too. Like... And six mana, I know, I was going to say that. Makes me crazy. But it's super good, right? Like, this is a card that could literally upend the whole meta when it shifts away from a meta that's so heavily driven by flooding the board and having a ton of stuff going on all at once. Like, as soon as you get back into a meta where people want big, sticky minions on the board, as opposed to, like, you know, playing a whole bunch of little things on curve, if we ever go back to a real control meta, like, Entomb Priest just wins by default, and that's crazy. It's so good as to be almost unbelievable in my mind.
Okay, so I have a question then. I pose a question, another one. I'm full of questions. So 2016 comes and passes. It's January 3rd, 2017. And we go back and say, of these cards that we've talked about, all, you know, about nine of them total, which ones are we still talking about? If you had to guess, which ones do you think will stand the test of 2016? Obviously, we're guessing here, but Kev or JR, you do it. Kev, Kev.
Well, JR. The only one that really, the two of them that come to my, in my opinion, will be Reno and Thorason. And Mysterious, well, Reno just gets better. Like I said, gets better the more expansions come out. He's just going to be better, you know, as more cards, because you can have more copies of just one. If they ever get around to fixing it where you can actually see when he can get activated, he's going to become even significantly better, because then you'll know exactly when you can play him. And then you can play copies of other cards as well and be able to see when you can activate them rather than keeping track of it manually.
Okay.
And so I think he's a big one. Emperor Thorason is just a good, like I say, he's a good tech choice for mid-range decks, and I think he always will be.
All right.
I can't say if Mysterious Challenger will or not. It just depends on if Secret Paladin is still a good deck in a year, which it has the tools to be, even though I don't like the deck, and I think it's lame, and I don't think it's as good as people claim it is. It can be very frustrating to play against, though. But if it's still there, then it's still going to be a card that sticks around.
What do you think, Kev?
You know, this is going to come as a shock, but I disagree. Because honestly, like, I look at a card like Thorason, and what I see is an incredible effect that could very easily be done differently elsewhere, right? Mana cost reduction is a mechanic that's been used a whole bunch of places, right? It's on that stupid Warlock minion that reduces minion costs. It's on Sorcerer's Apprentice. Like, mana cost reduction can be done in a variety of ways. So they could introduce a card that obviates Thorason in a number of new meta relevant decks a year from now. The cards that are going to stand the test of time are cards that cannot be replaced. There will never be a better Justicar Trueheart. And that is, by definition of what it does, an absolute staple in a series of control decks. There will never be a better Reno Jackson, because they're not going to make a card that does what Reno Jackson does better or at a lower mana cost or more efficiently. Like, that is going to be the best way to heal yourself by running a deck that has singleton cards forever. It will never be improved upon, right? They'll do other things, they'll do different things, but those cards remain fundamentally the best at what they do into eternity, right? Like, they just can't afford to be iterated on in any fashion. So I would say, yeah, like, Reno, Justicar for sure. JR's right. Mysterious Challenger really is a meta card, and it's a good meta card. It's really powerful by virtue of the fact that right now, because of the way the game is being played, build the biggest board the fastest is the only way to win, and no one can really contest Paladin at that right now. So, dear Blizzard, please give someone an efficient way to do something on the board faster than Paladin on a turn, just one, any one turn where they can do better than Paladin, and it'll be great. But yeah, it's for me, for sure, it would be Reno, Thorason, not so much, Justicar Trueheart for sure.
Hmm. Okay. I'm happy with those answers. Are we already ready to go to the mail? Are we ready?
I mean, there wasn't much going on this week, right? There's no esports over New Year's. We did sort of comment on, and I think it's maybe worth a discussion at a later date about Blizzard maybe looking at the way that their ladder lock timing works around major holidays and stuff like that. Like, it'd be super nice if they didn't force people to play until 3 a.m. on the East Coast on New Year's to try and fight for a spot on the ladder, or just don't count December. Like, maybe that would be a good solution. I don't know, because that's
they
why
just
most
stick to it, because I like enjoying, I enjoy watching people
you're
whine
such
about
such a
it.
Meanie. Of course you enjoy that.
You're curmudgeon.
It's all
curmudgeon-y JR
over here.
I'm just sitting over here like, oh, these poor Hearthstone pros having to not go out and party and spend their
you're a masochist.
Thousands
you get
of
off
dollars
on people's pain,
that they
man.
Won
this isn't okay.
Playing a game.
To be fair, though, they're the ones that then get to go all to the cool parties and tournaments throughout the... They get the one night, right? That's our night to party.
I just think...
Just kidding.
Like, this is why esports has an off-season, right? This is why esports kind of, like, comes to a slow at, like, the end of November, doesn't do much of anything in December. You know, there's one or two, like, for funsies tournaments, or maybe DreamHack feels the need to run something, and doesn't really ramp back up until about the middle of January. Like, counting December towards the Hearthstone World Championships might be the only thing that I can say isn't great about this year's system, because it feels odd to count 2015's ladder points in 2016. I don't know.
If there
it's
was
a minor quibble, right?
If there was a first world Hearthstone problem, this one would be it. 100%. Just
I think it's going 40 packs without a legendary, but call that for me. Guys, yeah. Let's go into the news. Or mail. Mail!
We've got mail.
All right, so we got an email from Ben B, who's not Ben Brode. We've gotten emails from him before, so. And he says, hey, gents, first off, as 2015 comes to a close, just wanted to thank you guys for nearly a year of great pods. I'm assuming that meant podcasts. I'm looking
forward... No, because we're three peas in a pod.
Right.
We're peas in a pod.
Like a tripod.
I'm looking forward to enjoying Hearthstone in 2016 along with you guys. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year's.
Yeah. Second, last week as part of your year in review, you talked about how Hearthstone fares in different countries. It started me thinking... Could you do an esports Olympics where rather than teams, countries are represented? Even a Blizzard-only one at BlizzCon would add a lot to the idea of a quote-unquote world championship. Hope you all have an excellent New Year's, Ben B. Kevin, I know you have some thoughts about this, so I will let you answer. Do you think there could be an esports Olympics for Hearthstone?
You're just picking on me because you know I'm going to say mean things to Ben because I disagree with his email. So, Ben, thank you for the question. It's a totally legitimate one. Personally, for me, I absolutely believe it could be done. And I believe that there could be like an interesting factor to it, like run a tournament Olympics style where each country has to find their best representative and then send them to an Olympics style tournament. The problem I have with it is it's not a really great fit for finding the best player in the world, right? Typically, to find the best player in the world, the like correct way to do that is to take and find the best pool of talent in the world and then have them face off. Now, to get the best pool of talent, there's an argument to be made that maybe there's five or six people in Europe who are all the best Hearthstone players. And I mean, obviously, when we talk about regions versus countries, it gets a little messy because that's how we're used to tracking things in Hearthstone. But in general, like, let's say there's like four totally unbelievable Norwegian Hearthstone players, but only one of them can go to this new like world championship format. We lose out on seeing three of the best players in the world by virtue of their nationality, and that sucks. It's a cool idea and it has a place, and I've been having this argument in the StarCraft world for years because we do have this exact problem. When you find the best 16 players in StarCraft in the world, they're all from South Korea. Like, there's just no point in bringing anyone else out to the world championships because it just lowers the overall level of play. It's cool to do like an Olympic style event, but it's not a world championship anymore because you're not identifying the single best player in the world necessarily. The only way to do that like really does it justice in my mind is just have the, you know, rank 1 to 16 best people come to BlizzCon and compete. And if four or five of them happen to be American, for example, right? Because that's a thing that happens. Okay, who cares? Like, why would we say only one person from the US can compete? That just doesn't seem like it's as interesting to me as a player to compete for that spot or as a fan to enjoy it.
Question. Okay. Okay, here. So I get what you're saying. I'm totally picking up on what you're throwing down. But we're not looking to find the best player in Hearthstone. We're looking to find the best representative country of Hearthstone players using the best talent from each country, right? So it'd probably have to be done more in an Archon style thing, right? Like almost like a team style tournament versus, you know, just like, okay, you four from US and you four from Canada and you four, I'll go there. Then you guys all play in groups and the winner of those groups go into a bracket and the country who has one player win is that player's the best player. Cause you're right. It's totally trying to look at team goals, or it's totally looking at two different goals. So what if what if you do it that way? So what if you take, and we've seen it on a large scale with China versus NA or China versus EU. We've seen those, are they the China Masters tournament or whatever? They bring on some really great NA players to play against some really great China players. They did it with EU as well and kind of see who's the better region. Can't you just distill that into countries now and start doing that?
Absolutely, you can. The problem for me, again, and I'm not saying this to be mean, it's just, it's 100% it's a personal opinion, and I have strong feelings on it, is that that works really, really well in team sports, right? You want to identify the strongest region by virtue of, if we take the pool of talent that's available and we construct the best possible team, now that we've identified the top, you know, 15 hockey players in Canada, let's send them and see how badly they beat the rest of the world, right? Like, and that's how the Olympics really works. There are very few Olympic sports that are actually interesting or relevant where it's just single competitors. It's scored on the basis of how well your team does in almost all cases. There's a handful, right? But not everybody's super excited about, like, who's the best diver in the world. And again, just for simple sake of argument, like, for the most part, in the individual sports in the Olympics, they do allow multiple competitors from an individual country. So at some point, like, really what we're having right now is kind of already a Hearthstone Olympics in the strictest sense of that term, because anybody from anywhere within reason can compete. There's still no provision in the 2016 Hearthstone World Championship rules for Africa, which I think is still an oversight. But in general, I don't think that we need the, like, specifics of an Olympic style format to find the best Hearthstone players in the world. And if you want to find the best country, you'd have to do it in, like, a team league format. You'd have to run like an ATLC that's done by nation, put together teams of three from each of the, you know, what, 15 or so strongest countries in the world or whatever. Like, I don't even know how you'd pick which countries can compete and how you'd format it. Like, it's a huge undertaking to identify which country rolls the highest on their Dr. Boom Boom Bots. Like, I don't know. It's a cool concept. I would love to watch it if someone put the work in to do it, but it feels like the, like, risk to reward ratio of establishing something like that would be way beyond the scope of what anybody has the appetite for in pro Hearthstone right now.
Now, I don't think it would work as a replacement to the World Championship. I think the World Championship, that works, is just fine. I think it would be a fun side thing. And hear me out. I got an idea. I got an awesome idea. And you guys are already shaking your heads. So
I'm
anyway,
shaking my head. I'm excited. You know, lay it on me.
So we find out who the best countries in Hearthstone are, and the winners get better servers and services from Blizzard for Hearthstone for that year. And the losers have to go through, like, disconnections and stuff. So it would force these people to really play their hearts out and try to win at Hearthstone.
And they have to play on New Year's Eve.
And they'd have to play on New Year's Eve at midnight.
God. Oh, not enough booze in the world.
Easy there, Satan.
Yeah. God.
Like,
it's
listen
just
to
the
this
anti-Christ
guy.
Christ saying, like, over I was here. All like gangster earlier with my hood up. Now I
okay.
can see where my evil
I was hoping
comes
he was
from.
Gonna be like, you know, oh, the winning country gets like a unique card back. We can have like a little maple leaf card back. Like, okay, sure, that sounds nice.
Man,
that's cute.
I think I want to dig deeper, and we got derailed here by JR's curmudgeon-y rant. He's on a roll, but let's dissect this for a second. How cool would it be for, you know, and again, maybe it's just the 20 most represented, you know, countries in premier and major tournaments over the last year. that's who you choose for your world, your Hearthstone World Cup, right? I mean, soccer does it the same way. And so basically what you do is you have tournaments for each country where anyone can sign, you know, can sign up, whatever, you run it in whatever format you need to do. And the top four players go on to represent that country. And we do an ATLC style best of seven, or top three and do an ATLC style best of five. And you actually get to see that and go, cool, we've got Firebat, we've got Nias, right? Nias is US, and we've got Frodan, right? Frodan is gonna come up and really represent. Like, how exciting would that be to now, instead of like, oh, I really like Team Liquid, or I really like Life Coach, instead to be able to go USA all the way and be able to be excited about your country going and representing and competing. It's the same thing with the World Cup, right? With soccer. You get the World Cup, and we have the world, I don't know what they call it anymore for baseball, but they do the same thing. And it's so cool because you get to just see which country is the best. You know, which country from the pool of players can come together in a group and all in all beat the other countries.
I think it's really cool. I like the idea, to be honest. It's very similar to the North America versus China, or, you know, that you said earlier, which I was actually the very first one of those. I don't know if you guys knew this. The very first one of those, I was actually one win a game from qualifying for the North America side to be on the North America team for that.
What?
Yeah, the very first one that they did.
And then you spout out ideas like you just had 3 minutes ago. God.
That's how I roll.
All right, so here's the thing. Conceptually, I love it. I love the idea of running a Olympics-style tournament somehow in parallel with the existing world championships. I've had this exact conversation for 5 years in Pro StarCraft. Like, it would be neat to see done alongside the World Championship Series. It would be neat to see done alongside a really good pro league, like a team league style competition endorsed by Blizzard. The reality is it's been tried, right? This is exactly what the World Cyber Games was. WCA has kind of tried to pick up the pieces when WCG died. The interest level is not really actually all that high, right? It's not like the Olympics where once every 4 years we all race to see who's doing it and a billion people tune in to see what happens. Like, the demand for it is very like aspirational. People like the idea, but there's not actually a lot of people who are like, oh, well, I mean, I would help fund money to send the representatives from my country to go compete, and I would watch it and I would tell my friends, and it'll like the actual like groundswell of support needed to get it off the ground doesn't exist. And I would love to see it done, but it remains kind of this thing where when it was over, we'd be like, okay, cool. So the US is the best at Hearthstone. That was neat. Should we do this again in 6 months? Like, you don't have a really good framework for how or why to do it.
Probably be Germany, by the way.
Probably be Germany. And then, like, there's just a huge cost to putting it all together. The production requirements, the travel requirements. Like, there's a reason that the Olympics puts whatever city hosts it into effective bankruptcy for years afterwards, right? Like, doing
this
that.
This isn't the Olympics. It's a singular video game.
Of the same scale, right?
No, you're not. You're talking about dozens of sports versus one competition, 20 countries, three player per, that's 60 players.
Sure,
right?
But if you want to put them all in one place to do this, I mean, you're already talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in just travel expenses, and that's before you actually set up a venue, pay commentators and production staff, host an event that's going to last, given the scale and the scope, probably weeks, and all of this so that you can get, if we're lucky, because let's be realistic here, maybe 100,000 people to tune in and watch. Maybe. Like, you would need every person who's willing to watch that Hearthstone stream to kick in probably $20 to pull this off, and it's not going to happen. It's cool at a level that vastly, like, and this is esports in general. Like, I'm not harping on Ben, I'm not harping on Hearthstone, I'm not harping on you guys, but like, the demand for this is all academic. When it comes time to put your money where your mouth is, esports is really bad for this, right? There's one event in the whole of esports, and that's the international, that actually draws enough value to pull something of this size off, and the only reason it does that is because Valve gives people a bunch of stuff in a game, so they throw a bunch of money at them because they like the idea of seeing a 16-year-old Brazilian kid become an instant millionaire overnight. Like, that's the single time this has ever happened. Nothing comparable has been done since, because most of us are like, yeah, I'll watch a free stream of a Hearthstone tournament, but I don't want to have to pay in any way to support it. And that's where it dies, right? If the average person listening to even this podcast were to be like, okay, in 2016, my resolution is to spend $50 on something to do with Hearthstone that isn't buying card packs. I'm going to subscribe to a stream. I'm going to donate to a podcast on Patreon. I'm going to go and I'm going to donate money to a tournament. Like, whatever it is that makes Hearthstone bigger than just the game for you, that would be unreal. But the odds that even with a huge campaign, even if we get on Reddit and beat the drum saying, like, help Hearthstone grow in 2016, spend a couple of bucks, like 1 in 100 people might hear that and do something with it. It's just the content consumption vastly outpaces the willingness to support content creation.
So, man, I couldn't disagree with you more. Like, I legitimately think that you are so far off right now that I am visibly angry. Just kidding. I'm not really angry. But I think there's a few things that you might be missing. Number one, it's not a funding problem. There's no way it's a funding problem. We've had 60 player invitationals before. We did the Fight Night stuff, year one Hearthstone, mind you, for a month straight. They brought out
and where's that company now?
15 player. But again, it's not because they didn't make money on those specific specific events. They actually went quite well. You know, they brought out about 45 to 50 players over the course of 2 months. Again, look at DreamHack, right? DreamHack, they just had 128 players Swiss, right? And
but they don't pay any of those players' travel expenses. Yeah. They don't underwrite that in any way.
Who says, like, you have to?
Sure, but you're saying, like, we're going to try and get, like, the Swahili Hearthstone team to generate enough money to show up and compete in the Hearthstone Olympics. Like, and there's definitely going to be problems.
This is the point that I'm willing to cede to you, is that there are not enough representative countries that draw enough viewers, so that when you have whatever, you have Argentina versus Mexico, you know, you have 5,000 viewers and all 5,000 are just people who love to digest Hearthstone. And then you have Germany versus USA, or Germany versus Finland or Sweden. And all of a sudden you have, yeah, or China, any of those EU or, Pacific, whatever. You have those players there. And yeah, you probably, and I would say right now, if we had Germany versus USA, I think you would get a TLC number. It's 150,000 plus. Hands down, I think that's no doubt. The problem is there's not enough countries represented. It's too young of a game, and Hearthstone would have to fundamentally reshift everything they built up over the last 2 years, right? They would have to go, we're no longer going solo here. They've kind of made it region-based, but it's not even super region-based, right? And so those are the points I'm willing to cede you, but I don't agree with you that if those things changed, if it was a more mature scene with more players from more countries who play it at a high level and had a large following, if Hearthstone went ahead and said, you know what, erase the last 2 years, teams and stuff don't matter anymore. It's, you're going to be representing with two other people your country and going head to head, and we're going to find out who the best is, and they're going to share a pot of $3 million or something like that. I think we'd get a huge draw. It'd be incredibly expensive, but also incredibly successful. And I think people would love it and eat it up.
So
equally to how it is now, but you'd have to fundamentally change so many things that I think we're too far gone. They would have had to start with that and go that route rather than try to, like, renege or do something alongside of. So in the end, I think your solution's right, but I just kind of disagree with your logic.
Kevin, remind me of WCS. I think it was 2012, maybe. It was the very first WCS that they did. Explain how they did it, if you remember.
I mean, 2012 was kind of a hot mess, right? They were trying to find two representatives from each country. They made a big list of eligible countries. The long and the short of it is it was a disaster, and the two people who showed up from Korea were the people who ended up going against each other in the final. I don't know. Like, I can't even talk about it without just being disappointed that it ever happened.
The way, like, that they did it was basically they had country representatives, then they went to, like, a regional final, like all the countries in North America that ended up winning went to the North America regional finals. All the countries in Europe went to the European country finals, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, what it came down to is the two that made it from Korea ended up going through and winning the entire thing.
Yeah.
So it's very similar to what this is.
I don't even think that would be the problem. Like, I love John's enthusiasm and I like the idea. Like, notionally, I'm not dismissing it. I just think about it to myself, thinking like, okay, if I'm going to pitch this as a concept, if I was going to go to Blizzard and say, hey, I want to do this thing, I think we can make arguably the most interesting competitive component of the scene for viewers happen if we do this, because people want to cheer for somebody local to them. That's why Blizzard has gone to things like doing the Fireside Gatherings as a big component of the Hearthstone World Championships in 2016. Like, they get it. They do. But I'd have to go to them and say, okay, so what I need is I need to find a way to drum up to run this for a year, probably about $3 million or so, to pay all my production staff, cover travel expenses, set up venues, get all the equipment together to pull this off. And I'm going to have to try and find sponsors who are willing to spend that money. And I got to go to a sponsor and say, yeah, I would like you to give me $500,000 so that I can slap your logo onto a stream in front of 50,000 people. And they're going to laugh me out of the room. Like, this is a huge issue. It's been ongoing in esports for as long as we've been calling it esports. Since we stopped calling it competitive gaming and started calling it esports, this has been the like thrust of the primary reason that all the coolest stuff that we're all super excited about conceptually can't get off the ground. Because what we need, John, honestly, is we need guys like JR.
It's not a funding issue.
We totally need guys like JR, right? Who are willing to drop a gazillion dollars on Royals merchandise and Royals tickets and Royals stuff. We need those people in esports. We need people who are as excited about Team Liquid as they are about the 49ers or the Royals or whoever. That's the real gap. And that's something that we haven't solved as a whole industry. We haven't figured out yet.
I don't even say it's you haven't figured out. It's we haven't grown into it. It's a growing thing.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. You're right. It's not like a solved problem.
Yeah,
right,
I mean, esports are growing exponentially. To say that it's got to still get to that level. It took, I mean, even Major League Baseball, right, it took decades before it was finally at a point where people gave a crap.
Yeah, but yep. look at it this way, though. Like, think of when they did Heroes of the Dorm for Heroes of the Storm. Like, that was huge because you had people watching this that would have never watched it before because they're sitting there rooting for their school because that is something personal for them. That's the reason why I root for the Royals, because I live in the city and it's an easy team to root for. I can go to the games. I can participate. Esports doesn't have anything personal to me, and a country would be cool. Don't get me wrong, going USA, USA, but at the same time, it's also like, I don't feel that way with the Olympics. Yeah, it's fun to go USA, USA, but I'm not that invested in the Olympics.
Not a patriot. You're not a patriot.
Exactly. I'm not. I'm a gangster. I'm a thug or something. I don't know. I'm with Kevin a little bit on this.
We're all together on this.
I think it's really cool. But I, as someone who is not as invested in esports as you guys are, like, the reason why I'm not is because I don't have that same connection that I have with my sports team in my city. Because
I do believe
one day
esports will be an esport. I don't know if it'll be Hearthstone, but esports will be large enough one day to where we do see a World Cup style esport thing, and people are going to love it and eat it up. But we're growing into that right now. We're at the point where we're finally getting people to, like, I buy Team Liquid jerseys and all that kind of stuff all the time. And so we're getting to the point where we're getting there. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's just, it's timeline. Hearthstone couldn't do it right now and be successful, but it doesn't mean that it's not an idea, and it's not an idea that couldn't work.
Yeah, the problem I have with the teams now is they're run by, you know, sub 20-year-olds or younger, and they can come and go anytime.
Yeah, like so Facebook, you know, that's how Facebook got started, and Apple.
Can we appreciate for a minute, he said sub 20-year-olds or younger? Like, I want you to find me, like, the 15-year-old kid who runs, like, a major esports organization. Anyway, guys.
I wouldn't put it past it. It's there.
Wild, wild sidebar. Ben, in answer to your question, could it be done? Absolutely. Thanks for
your
email.
Do we
want
to see it? Yes. We got to get out of here.
We can do this for another hour. Go.
That was fun. Thank you guys so much for hanging out for the show. We got to go ahead and get out of here. First, Patreon news, Kevin.
Yes. So if you haven't already had a chance to see kind of what we had to say about the updated Patreon earlier in the show, we are going to be updating the Patreon site here coming up this week, sending out messages to all of our backers for December. Thank you all so much for making what we're doing here possible. We're going to try and grow this show a lot in 2016. We're going to try and do really cool stuff for you guys, and we're all super excited about it. We're to a point where we're having meetings, guys. We're having meetings. And the fact that I have to schedule meetings and put things in my calendar and have meetings means that we're serious, okay? It's
a big deal. On New Year's Eve, too, at midnight, we're doing meetings.
On New Year's Eve at midnight. Because that's how JR likes it. So, yes. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Become a backer. Don't jump on it right this second. I know it sounds insane for me to say don't do it right now, but give me a couple of days to get all the new stuff up to date for January so you can check out the new reward tiers, the new structure, and get on board for whatever kind of fits for you as a new backer so that you get the rewards that you want. Thank you especially this week to Jeff F., who is a new patron. Thanks for your support, man. We really appreciate it.
Also, if you do go ahead and do it before we update the tiers, we're going to automatically add you to the new tiers. So just as an FYI, we're not going back to the old tiers as of January 1st. So,
which does mean for existing supporters, if you haven't already claimed your rewards, if you haven't got your t-shirt or your voicemails or any of that stuff, please jump on that right away. Email us ASAP so that we can get you your stuff, because as of January now, those things don't exist anymore. No one is going to get them anymore. As your limited last chance exclusive opportunity to make John say something ridiculous that you can use as a ringtone on your phone.
Yeah, like I don't say enough of it already. Okay, now we got to go to iTunes reviews. I'm going to say them first so that you can actually hear your names on the show, because I'm worried about my singing will be inaudible. But I promised you I'd sing them. So we got 4 new reviews from Canada, Jman3256. From Finland, Axioqu. Axioqu. And then from USA, Malayas and Top Reason. Thank you guys so much. We love seeing those 5-star reviews. I think we're the 3rd most reviewed podcast of all the Hearthstone podcasts now. So thank you guys so much for your reviews. They mean the world to us, for real. But I said I would sing them. I need a little help, though. Give me a sec.
Jman3256. Axio Cutie. Malays and Top Reason.
You're welcome.
I'm gonna cry.
You're welcome. I had to do it.
Oh, what?
I had my buddy T-Pain come in. kick me in the crotch.
And then let me sing
into his microphone.
Oh my god.
Yeah, well timed to mute. He's exactly right. Sorry we had to do that. But a few of those reviews said we had to sing him, so we sang him. Sorry again. Thank you guys so much. Shout outs. Thanks to everyone for an awesome 2015. We love you guys. We're going to go ahead and start the post show stream here. Thanks so much. Let's go ahead and close this up. No shout outs unless you have something super important.
I just want to give a shout out to the people who made you sing.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
It's never happening
again. That made 2016.
It's never happening
again.
Awesome. Okay. So, first, a big shout out to Jake Butno over at jakebutno.ca for doing all of our music, sorry. I didn't mean my music. Dreadscythe of scythedesigns.com for all of our logo work. Email us at wellmet@blizzpro.com. Send us your tweets at wellmetpodcast. We're on a subreddit at r/wellmetpodcast, patreon/wellmetpodcast, and of course, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else. We'll see you guys next week.
You can find John on Twitter @KickedTripod and on Twitch at twitch.tv/KickedTripod. You can find JR on Twitter @Eldorian and on Twitch at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. And you can find Kevin on Twitter @LackOfRealism and on Twitch at twitch.tv/OdinTV. BlizzPro.com. Beyond Noob.